Hello, and welcome to Aspiring Mormon Women Podcast. And I'm Naomi, and I'll be your hostess tonight as we talk to Galen Smith and Gloria Johnson, two women who I know personally who are two of my personal role models. And we're going to discuss tonight about returning to school later in life, since both of them have successfully done so. A little bit about Galen and Gloria and how we know each other. I've known Galen since I was about 11 or 12. Believe it or not, and remember her as one of the few Mormon women in my ward growing up who was actively pursuing an advanced degree. And I met Gloria Johnson when she served as the bishop's wife in one of the singles wards I attended in a downtown Salt Lake City ward. And at that time, she was also pursuing a master's degree. But instead of me blabbing on about them, I'm going to have them both introduce themselves briefly, and then we'll get into the meat of our discussion. So Gloria, do you want to start?
I will start. Thank you for the compliment. And it's hard to be brief at my age because I have, you know, I've lived a long time, it seems like. Anyway, I grew up in a small town in California, Northern California, in the 50s. And I have two older brothers and two younger sisters. My father was an educator. And my mother was a stay-at-home mom. And in my era, the boys would go on missions and come home and then go to college, eventually find a wife and get married. And it always kind of seemed to be the goal for girls my age to go to college to find a husband. So came time to go to college. I had applied to BYU, and being from California, I have to say that it was kind of the dream and the goal to be able to go to BYU and hopefully to find a husband. That's just how it was back then. And so I fortunately was accepted to BYU. And I got teased by, I don't know, some of my friends, more particularly from a cousin who teased me about just going to find a husband and that I probably wouldn't graduate and maybe I'd be lucky to make it through 1 year. And, you know, it didn't bother me because deep down inside, I thought that really was my goal. I just wanted to be married and start my family. And to be honest, I didn't take school seriously. I was, you know, I didn't think when I started that I didn't really know if I would finish or not. But anyway, I got to college. I loved college because I'm an extrovert. And so I loved being away from home for the first time, 800 miles away and on my own. And I learned a lot and I had a lot of fun and I was not a serious student. And it took me 4 years and two classes left before I graduated. In my fourth year, I met my husband, Bob Johnson, who is a wonderful husband, and got married and then finished those two courses after I was married and I graduated in elementary education. Back then, it was like that was the perfect career for a woman to teach school. And I had aunts that were teachers and my dad, an educator. And I just didn't give it enough serious thought before I started into it.
I too grew up in California, but in the southern side in a beach community right off of Los Angeles in El Segundo. And I still live in a beach community in Southern California in Carlsbad. And I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. But I think we have a lot in common because the options as a woman seem to be rather limited, and I wasn't one to be limited. I just thought I should explore the entire world, and I should do it before I was 12. I came from a middle-class family. The only person I knew that had even gone to college was my uncle, who had graduated from UCLA. College wasn't discussed. I didn't do well in elementary school. I finally figured out in junior high by sheer accident that I could think, and I made the honor roll, which surprised me more than anyone. And when I got into high school, someone said, well, did you fill out your college papers? You know, you're a freshman, you better fill out your college papers. And I thought, okay, all righty. So I followed her to the counselor's office, and fortunately she was heading to BYU. So I thought, well, okay, I'll go there. And that's where I went. And that's really kind of how it went. Of course, then the option is when you get there, what do you do? And I was just so excited to be there. This was the entire library in front of me. I had all these professors that were suddenly sharing this wealth of knowledge that I was looking for my whole life. And I think I drive my own children crazy with that idea that I just like to learn. I don't like to take a test or do any assignments. I just like to learn. But that's kind of part of, you know, of growing up. But I think, I feel very blessed to have grown up in a beach community. And Naomi, maybe you can agree to this since you lived in Carlsbad, but you just can't be stressed or hurried when your feet are in the sand and you're watching this gorgeous sunset. And I think I had that every day of my life. And it was an opportunity for me to stop and say, you know, some things just aren't that important and some things are. And to me, knowledge was fun for me. It was important. I always had questions. I always wanted to do everything. I don't have enough time in life to do it all. And I still feel that way. But at a very young age, I felt that way. So that's pretty much my introduction.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because, Gloria, you talked about how you felt like that was the only option to be a teacher. And I ended up at BYU against all – I did not want to go to BYU, but I ended up there. And then I really fought going into education because I remember people saying to me – I was an English major at the time. People saying to me, well, what are you going to do with that? Teach? And I was like, no. There are so many other things that I can do besides teach. And I, you know, it really, I kind of fought that whole stigma for quite a while up until the end. I was about to graduate with an English degree and was like, I really don't know what I'm going to do. And then thought, actually, you know, I do enjoy teaching, regardless of the fact that this might be some type of stereotype or what everyone has said that I should do. But it's what I But it is what I enjoy. So I had a different...
And I've heard you teach, and you are an excellent teacher.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So but, I kind of... Oh, Galen.
No, well, I think we have some generations here, and it's interesting that we all still had the same options. I mean, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. We didn't have a whole lot, but we had enough of what we needed. But my mom created, you know, all of our clothes and our curtains, and my dad built all of our furniture, and... You know, he was not a member of the church, and my mom was, and it just didn't occur to them to send me to BYU or to even send me to college. Their idea was that you're just going to marry a nice guy and settle into life. And, well, that sounded nice, but there were so many other things. And growing up, I hated it when people said to me, so what do you want to be when you grow up? And I remember being about five and having someone, a lady asked me that question, and I said to her, I want to be a fireman. And she laughed and said, no, honey, girls aren't firemen. I remember thinking, why not? Why can't I be a fireman? They're cool. Everybody likes them. Nobody shoots at them. And they save people. And everybody likes them to show up. And so
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, my only option was, so as I asked people what she would be, and she said to me, girls are either mommies, nurses, teachers, or secretaries. And I thought, okay, I'm not very good at any of those. So well, I thought, I'm in big trouble because I'm sorry, I just didn't fit that one. The fireman, I had better options at being a fireman than I would ever be at being a nurse because that's not my talent or forte.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because I finished college and then I never taught school full time. I substitute taught and I actually thoroughly enjoyed that. But after I was married, I wanted to become a mother, and lo and behold, I never got pregnant. And so I worked retail and secretarial jobs, and then sometimes substituted until we moved back to Utah. and applied for adoption. And then when I got our first child, I stayed at home. But I'll have to say I did a lot of volunteer work, you know, at the church, jobs, of course. And then I worked in PTA, and I was on a couple of boards in the community that raised money for our local primary children's medical center. And so it always helped to have my college degree, you know, for the things that I did.
Yeah, I always felt a little guilty that because my parents didn't have a lot of money and they sacrificed for me to go to school a great deal, and I was certainly a starving student for a long time. So I felt a little guilty that I wasn't immediately going to put this into use. And why am I in school if I'm just going to be not going to be if I was going to be a mom and a stay-at-home mom? Until someone read Brigham Young's statement about building BYU, and it's pretty much paraphrased, that if we can only have enough funds to educate men or women, we're going to educate the women because they will raise the next generation. And that was the last time I felt guilty about going to school and gaining some knowledge. I didn't go to school because I'm supposed to get a job. I went to school to learn. And that just changed my perspective about what I did in the future and how I chose my careers or my studies.
So what did you end up majoring in?
Well, considering I'm the woman that wants to do it all and be a fireman and everything, I actually majored in liberal studies, which you want to talk about jokes. You just major in liberal studies. Forget English. Even liberal studies, they're not really sure what to do with you because you majored in liberal studies. It was the best thing I ever did, considering the rest of my degrees. But I couldn't decide on a major. Everything was exciting. And I felt almost like I had failed because I had majored in liberal studies, and yet I felt impressed that that was truly the right thing for me to major in. I had no question. You know, you get that peripheral consideration, and that's what I was to major. I didn't even know there was such thing as liberal studies. That was kind of strange.
And that was at BYU? I don't remember hearing about that.
See? It's the best kept secret ever, BYU.
I wish I'd known about it.
Was that it's essentially like a humanities degree, right?
It's under humanities degree, which is, okay. Yes, that's, well, and then I'd never heard of that either. I remember going in, the counselor said, what, I need to finish my degree, and how can I do that? And I stopped after 2 years and had an AA and then married and had some children and knew that I had to go back. And each time I kept saying, should I go back now? No. You know, you'd pray about it. Should I go back now? No. And then when you have a house full of kids, you'd pray, should I go back now? Yes. Really? I don't have any money now. I don't have any time. I have a house full of kids. And now you want me to go back to school? But it's never on our timeline. And when I went back to school, they looked at all my credits and said, you know what, this is what you need to do. This would be ideal for you. And it was. It was absolutely perfect.
So, okay, pause for 1 second. So how many years between your AA and then when you finally went back and said, what do I do with this? And, you know, and they pointed you in the direction of that major.
Well, let's see. Let me count my children. I had a 5-year-old, so let's see.
First of all, remind me what an AA is.
Associates.
Associate of Arts.
Associates what? What's the other?
Of Arts.
Oh, of Arts. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't do well with just letters.
So it had been about 6 years from the time I left BYU and the time I went back. And I had 3 children at the time. And it took me 4 years to complete those 2 years because I was in California and BYU obviously was not. So it required that I have residency. Mm-hmm. And so I did some continuing ed courses in distance learning to meet some of my requirements. And then I had to have residency in the summer. And because I had to have 4 of those residencies, I had to do it in 4 summers.
Wow, that's impressive, though, that you did that.
So, but when I started, I thought, oh, this is a nightmare. Wow, I'm 28 years old, and in 4 more years, I'm going to be an old lady. I can't believe it's going to take me 4 years to finish this. And someone turned to me and said, So whether you start now or you start later, it's still going to be 4 years from now.
Right. Yeah.
I thought, well, duh. Okay, that makes sense. So I just jumped in, and seriously, it was one of the best things I could have done.
Well, let's point out this was pre-internet.
Yes. Let's get the time clock out here.
Well, I mean, think about how different that would be, that whole experience, if you could do it with the internet, you know?
At home and online, huh?
Yeah, we were so excited that we had a cassette tape that I could respond to my instructor and write it up, drop it in the mail, and then he would respond on a cassette. It was pretty amazing, but it was difficult at times. Your exams were taken at a testing center.
Well, they still do that at BYU, but.
Yeah. you know, Galen, when you talked about you didn't know what to major in, it made me think that I wish, and this would be my advice to anyone that wants to go back to school and they don't know what to major in, is I would highly recommend going to a counseling center and taking those personality tests and having someone evaluate what career line suits your personality type. I could have really benefited back then to just know myself better and what I'd be better suited to do, you know. Not that what I majored in was any waste of my time. I don't feel that at all. But I could have maybe been just a little more productive, a little more goal-directed, you know, in a field.
Well, I have to say that the joke is that I literally in my lifetime have earned a diploma. If we count our kindergarten graduation, I have graduated every decade of my life. So there's big gaps of 10 years between degrees. So when I finished my undergrad, I remember standing at BYU commencement and, you know.
You were 32 at this point?
I was 32 at that point, and I was, good job at the math. I was, you know, grateful. This was, you know, that relief of I finished my undergrad. I really think that's one of the most difficult degrees because it comes early in your life and it takes a long time. And I was grateful. I thought, oh, I'm done. And I remember the spirit going, no, not really. You know, you need to get a master's. I thought, I don't know why I need to get a master's. And it was always go back then and reread your patriarchal blessing, because it clearly states, clearly, you need to go to school. You need to get an education. You need to go on to higher ed and learn all that you can, because, and this was the key, the more that you learn and the more that you're in school, the more that you will understand things of the spirit. And I thought, that's really interesting. So when I finished my undergrad, I really found that to be true, especially when you major in liberal arts. You get a little bit of everything. And there were connections. I started to be making these connections about knowledge, the secular knowledge and spiritual knowledge. And so I pushed it aside and kind of thought, well, you know, down the road when I'm old, I'll go get a master's degree. It came a little sooner than I expected. And I remember standing in school at this time. I was teaching art in elementary school, and I'm standing in class, and this prompting was, you need to go back to school. This is where you need to be. You need to be teaching these children for a while, and while you teach these children, you need a master's degree. I thought, well, okay, but how do you do those things? How do you and you know what? I've learned from this lesson that when the Spirit says go do something, just do it. Take a leap of faith. I had 101 reasons on one side of the paper why I should not go back to school, and really only one reason why I should. And so you go to the library, because once again, we didn't have internet, and you look up every school you can think of to figure out, where am I supposed to go to school? And I found the perfect, as soon as I went down the page, it's like, this is it. I said, I don't know anything about Cal State Dominguez Hills, so I studied up on it. And sure enough, they had an unbelievable humanities program that would fit into my life. I don't know how I paid for it, because at the time we had lost our home in a business dealing and didn't have much of anything. And somehow it all got paid for. And so I finished my humanities degree, and I thought, I have no idea what I'm going to do with this. And in the meantime, I had been teaching as an art teacher at the local elementary school, which was a fabulous experience in my master's degree program. So one, if the spirit says go back to school, go back to school. Somehow it'll all get paid for, it'll all get work. Somehow you'll get your assignments done, even though, you know, your kids are there and need you. If you put them first, it all gets done. But I actually majored in humanities, and then when I finished my core, it was, no, you're in the wrong major. I thought, no, really? You couldn't have told me that in the beginning? I mean, you couldn't have prompted me in the beginning? And it was, no, now you need to switch. Now that you've taken these courses, you need to switch to arts and humanities. So I did. I called up the counselor and said, I need to switch. I don't know why. Just switch me over. And, of course, I had taken a couple of extra courses that I didn't need. And I was kind of annoyed that prompting didn't come earlier, or maybe I didn't hear it, that I had these two extra courses. And I'm, you know, in the long run, you realize you're not in charge, because down the road when I went to work for the university, those two courses actually allowed me to teach a number of other courses on a university level. So that worked out. But I had no idea what to do my master's thesis on, and I was in a fifth grade class, and a student was flipping through an encyclopedia and handed me the encyclopedia to put away, and I was flipping through it as I put it away, and a picture popped off the page, and this artist said, I'm here, you need to write your master thesis on me. Mm. So I did, and not only did I do that, but as I did that, she was there. I mean, it was kind of...
Wait, who was the artist?
Artemisa Gentileschi. You can spell that real fast.
I'll Google her.
And, you know, I'm writing this woman's work, and she was always, you know, squashed in her lifetime because she was a female artist, and she lived in the Baroque period, and she is an amazing artist. And as I'm writing her story, I'm realizing that it wasn't her art story she wanted me to tell. It's her story of her family. And I realized that. And while I'm trying to write, when I ignored that, I didn't have any inspiration. So I started putting her family together. I actually did her temple work, which was an amazing experience. And I thought, so that's it. I had to get a master's degree so that I could write this woman's story and do her temple work. I thought, okay, that's great. Because after all, I'm a mommy, and you know, I didn't have a career path, and that sounded great to me. And it was 2 years after I finished my master's. I literally ran into a man that I hadn't seen for 20 years. And out of his mouth, first thing he said was, you need to come and work at the university. We are looking for people to teach humanities. Mm. So that's how that ball
when
got.
When does that ever happen?
Yeah. You know what? And I kind of laugh because I have to tell you, in my entire lifetime, I've had a number of jobs, and I've only interviewed for two of them. Mm. And one was a faculty member, but even my current position, I mean, I didn't interview. I just, you know, when doors open and the spirit directs, you just take a leap of faith and you walk through it. And my master's degree was a major turning point for me in my life. It was just amazing. And there's still, I've still followed this artist, and we've discovered some more information. And now I need to go seal her family, because we couldn't find her children, and they've recently found her children. So I think it was I got to do something on an eternal perspective, but I was really the winner here, because it pretty much laid the foundation of the rest of my life in a spiritual realm as well as in secular knowledge. I mean, it was a turning point.
That's a remarkable story. Quite a profound experience.
Yeah, I feel very lucky and very blessed to have had that.
So how long did it take you to do your master's degree?
Oh, forever. seriously, it was my longest degree. It took me 5 years. You know, it's supposed to be a 2-year program. And I had a mom. I had 4 kids. And, you know, I did teach art 4 days a week, but I was only in school when they were in school, and when they were home, I was home. And it was hard to be in school and raise a family and make that a priority and still be primary president at the same time. So But I just knew if I just inched my way through, and I literally completed it 30 days before that 5-year deadline, you know, when you have to start over again, which was great, great motivation. Yeah. It works. I'm not saying it's easy. It's still hard work to raise your family and be a mom and do your church calling and be a wife and then still be in the situation. But I would hope through all that, that my children were also seeing an example in me and what they could do.
Mm-hmm. So Gloria, do you want to talk a bit about your experience going back to school later?
Sure. Yeah. One evening, my husband came home and he was a member of the board of the Primary Children's Medical Center. And he was tired and we were sitting in the den and he said, you know, will you read this pamphlet they gave me out loud to me? And so I said, sure. And I'm reading this pamphlet to him about the Primary Children's Medical Center. And in it, they made a reference to the bereavement counselors. And I stopped when I read that line and I turned to Bob and I said, wow, that's something that I wish I could do. It just sounded very appealing to me. And he said, okay. And I said, well, but to ever do it, I'd have to get a master's degree. And he said, okay. And I said, but that would mean I may have to take a statistics class or math. And he goes, okay. and then I reminded him that I wasn't a serious student when I got my bachelor's degree. And he said, well, why don't you just make a phone call to the director of the program and visit with him about it? And so I did. I called and made an appointment, and he recommended that I take a couple of courses in the summer, get to know social work courses. And he said, get your transcripts from BYU. And so I did that. And my husband recalculated my transcript. My transcripts, he eliminated all of my religion courses and recalculated my GPA, and I had the minimum requirement to apply for the program. And I was so grateful. You know, those religion classes at BYU, I always found them to be quite difficult.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They are.
So, and so I thoroughly enjoyed the courses I took in that summer, and I went back to the director and I said, here's my transcript, and I loved the courses I took, and I was real direct with him. I said, you know what? Can you please just tell me if I have any chance of being accepted into this program? Because frankly, I don't want to go through this whole process if you don't think I have a chance. And he said, go ahead and apply. And the other thing that was really interesting and wonderful for me is I mentioned to him that, you know, you say the word math, and I almost go sick because I just have this fear of math. I just didn't learn math very well. And I think I mentioned the word statistics too. And he said, well, I can waive that for you. And the moment he said and volunteered to waive a course, it had never occurred to me that you could waive a course in a master's program. But when he said that, I thought, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to be accepted. And I hadn't even sent in my application yet, you know. So I applied and I got accepted. And, I forgot the part about when I was reading the pamphlet to Bob that evening, when I read a part about the bereavement counselor and had that little discussion with Bob, I had this feeling come into me of this tremendous exhilaration and excitement. And I'm sure it was just the Holy Ghost, you know, telling me, hey, this is for you. You know, you need to do this. You're going to do this. And then I remember thinking, if I ever had a negative thought about it, like, oh, I'm too old to go back to school, you know, and I had a daughter getting married. We're planning a wedding, and we sold our home, and I was in the middle of a move and starting school at the same time. But any time I had the slightest negative thought about it, I would have that same feeling come into my soul. And I can't hardly explain it except to say that it was just exhilarating and wonderful. So that was a nice moment for me.
Well, and I think, well, I've had moments like that too in my own educational path. And I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I hate that this phrase, but it is definitely a tender mercy, because it's hard. Like Galen was talking about, it's hard to do worthwhile, hard things.
So it's a sacrifice. And yeah, then when I got to school, started class the first day, we had an orientation, and I saw another woman that looked about my age, and we just gravitated. Literally, we just walked slowly towards each other and introduced ourselves. And that was the beginning of a nice friendship too. But I was really quite nervous and excited. And I remember it was really a hard adjustment going back to school. I had a hard time sleeping. I actually lost 10 pounds, but just from the anxiety of it. But I did not miss one class, and I loved every moment of being in the classroom. And, you know, because of my age, I wasn't afraid to ask one question, and I didn't care, you know, what anybody thought about me. I usually think was asking questions that some people were afraid to ask, but wanted to, you know. Anyway, I would do it all again because I loved every moment of it, even though it was hard too, and a really hard adjustment. I did get over the adjusting of it though, and could relax after a while.
And I think age has no barrier when it comes to learning. And I was, I have to tell you, when I returned to BYU during those residencies, I had a roommate, and my roommate happened to be Andrea, who was a 5'9" white haired 71-year-old woman. And I was young enough to be her granddaughter. She was amazing, and sharp and quick-witted, and just got as excited about learning quirky things as I did. And I just admire her so much. Of course, when she walked across the stage, everybody cheered, you know, in graduation, because she's an older woman. And I said, why did you choose to do this? And her response was, because I need to learn all I possibly can. And that was her comment. That was it. It's time for me to go back to school. I'm 71, and now is the time I am supposed to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. Was she just finishing her bachelor's degree then too?
Yeah.
At 71?
Yes. And at 90-something, I think she said, you know, maybe I should go back for a master's, which she didn't do. But I think if she was physically capable, she would be signing up.
And really, if life is eternal, what difference does it make where you start getting a degree? You know what I mean?
Right.
If you have the means and the energy, you should do it. I'd recommend it.
Yeah. Go fight, win.
However, I've talked to people who've and known people getting their PhDs, and I highly admire you guys, because I don't know that I would ever do that.
Don't say that, because it. Don't say that, because after I finished my master's degree, I was like, I'm done forever. Yeah. And then, yeah. So
that's what I said. I'm done. And then the little voice said, well, maybe not so in another 10 years. I thought, really, another 10 years? I'll be ancient.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about either of you about some particular challenges in going back to school, especially, you know, Galen, you were getting your master's degree and still had kids at home, whereas Gloria, her kids were not at home. And so challenges that way, or responses of other people to you going back to school? I guess it's kind of two questions.
Both. But. Yeah, that's okay. But you get both. You really do. You get both.
One leads to the other.
I think the challenge, it was a great lesson, was how do you juggle this? How do you manage to do all of this and still be great at all of it? And it started when my three-year-old decided to help his mommy one day, because I had spent several hours doing research. So I sat down to write a paper, and he played on the floor for like 2 hours. It was just awesome. I thought, oh, what a nice blessing. He's you know, played so nice. And I have been typing on the word processor. And I said, I was done with the draft. It was a 10-page draft, and I had finished it. And I said to him, let's clean up, and mommy will take you to the park. And he said, great. And so I'm looking away, and he turns over and he cleans everything up and pulls the plug.
Oh, no.
And I lost all 10 pages.
Oh, no.
And I remember turning
Nightmare.
Around and him holding the plug, like, I'm helping mommy. And oh. I thought, inside, I want to scream and I want to cry. I really want to cry. And I thought, how? This is more important. This paper I'm writing, forget it. I don't even know what it was about. So I thanked him, and I told him not to play with the plugs. We plugged it back in. I made him lunch. We went to the park. I cried all the way to the park and all the way back home, but I tried not to let him see. And I thought, okay, really, what is the worst thing that could happen here? I mean, he is an eternal consequence, and the paper is a momentary one. And I thought, so what? I'll stay up all night and get it done. Or I will turn it in late. Or what if I fail the class? You know, the worst case scenario. What if I fail the class? And I thought, you know, what is my fear? I thought, so what? You fail the class, you take it over again. I mean, it was just, I suddenly had this moment of, I just have to put the eternal principles first and those priorities first, and everything else will happen. And I can't tell you, time and time again, I tried to do my homework and couldn't concentrate, had this whole stupor of thought because I had pressing family needs or church needs or whatever. And as soon as I just decided, okay, I'm actually going to have to turn this in late. And I went and took care of my family. And when I came back, it was like I had this Urim thumb. I just could all of a sudden understand everything that I was reading and had my eye open to the assignment. And I never once turned in a late assignment. So I think there's, I think that's what I learned, was that priority of doing that. But then you still have people that said, why are you doing this? Are you planning on going to work? Mm-hmm. You don't really need to go to work. I mean, people would tell me, you don't need to go to work. You know,
well,
we're finance. Okay. You know, you don't need to work, and you have young kids, and why are you doing this? This just doesn't, you know, why would you put yourself through this? And I don't. My only response, if they were LDS, to say is, this is what I've been directed to do. And the outside world said, well, now that you finished this, what are you going to do with it? I mean, you're supposed to put it to use now. You're supposed to have a career. You're supposed to. And I didn't know what that was. I was just doing what I was told for that moment at that time. But it's interesting, the comments that you do get.
Yeah, I kind of had the same. I had some people that were envious of me and wished that they could go back to school. And then others that would say, wow, why are you doing that? You know?
Were those mostly women or men? Or both?
I think for me, in retrospect, I'm trying to think, probably women.
Mine were both.
Mine were mostly women. And I was going to tell you how I was blessed when I went to school. I love that Heavenly Father knows us individually so well, because I have a lot of anxiety in taking tests. My mind kind of goes blank, and literally blank, and I can't, you know, think clearly at all. And I had, in 2 years of my coursework, two exams, and they were open book exams. And my classes, professors required presentations for the most part, and papers. And so I felt like, wow, I was just so blessed, because really, if I had to take an exam, I don't know that I could have done it. I really don't. So I was blessed that way.
And how was your family a support to you? How was Bob and your daughters, Gloria?
Well, my oldest daughter actually has a master's of social work. I watched her go through it at BYU. My master's is from the University of Utah. And that probably also sparked some interest in that field as I, you know, she talked about her studies and everything. And so, wow, very supportive. Both my girls and Bob was just wonderful. I mean, Bob would never discourage anybody from taking a course of any kind. I would write my papers, and he was kind enough to do some editing on them, and he could not have been more supportive. You know, you talked, Galen, about, you know, using your education, and kind of people assume that you are going to go to work and, you know, pursue a career because you have a degree. Well, I have not chosen to work full time. And people will say, well, do you feel bad not using your degree? And it's kind of like you want to go, oh my goodness, if you only knew. I use what I learned in my master's every day of my life now, all the time. And I just feel very fulfilled whether I am if I'm employed outside my home or not. I'm just so thrilled to have it, and it's so useful to me.
Well, and I think in hindsight, I am amazed that, you know, you grow up in the church and you know that Heavenly Father is very aware of you, and mm-hmm. you know that. And then you're continually amazed when you actually see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because in hindsight now, getting old and looking back, I think there was a reason for every single thing, just like the extra courses came into play later, and the time in which I earned that master's came into play, the time that I earned my doctorate came into play. I mean, why in the world would I get a doctorate? That just never crossed my mind. I finished my master's and thought I was done. And then the little voice said, I completely didn't think anything about it. And I was a faculty member at the University of Phoenix at the time. And they called me in and said, we'd like you to start up a college for us, a college of ed. And I thought, what are you talking about? I didn't major in ed, but you're an art teacher. So do you think you can put this together for us? And do you have some ideas? Can you brainstorm? So I started brainstorming with them and working it through and giving them guidelines. And the next thing I know, they said, well, can we just hire you to consult with us? Sure. I'll just work from home and I'll consult. And then the next thing was, well, you know, you're kind of doing the job. So can we just hire you for the job? I said, but, you know, I don't do Mondays and I have time with my kids and I don't wash windows. And you should have heard me. I just, you know, I don't do this. I don't do that. My kids come first and I still have people at home and blah, blah, blah. And they said, okay. And
how long later after your master's degree was all this?
Probably 7 years.
Okay.
Because remember, my degrees are all 10 years apart.
Right.
So it was about 6 or 7 years.
How long did you work on your PhD? How long did that take?
Oh, that was much faster than my master's. That took 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is like turbo speed.
I think that's really fast. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it was turbo speed because I doubled up on some courses and then I took a year to write my dissertation. But my chair just rushed me through it because at the time my dad had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and she wanted to make sure that he was there at my graduation and would be remembering that. So she was pushing that. My chair was awesome. So that's why I went through turbo speed. But even then, I said to my boss, I said, I don't need a doctorate. I'm not spending, you know, $40,000, $60,000 to get a doctorate. And I still have kids in college and some at home. And I need to spend time with them. And mom, you should have heard me. And he said, well, let me see what I could do. And he came back and he said, I think we'll pay for that. We'll pay for your education, and I don't know that that happens very often, and you can have some release time to do what you need to do, because I know you'll do the job no matter what. And the next thing I knew, I was walking into a classroom and earning a doctorate, and I kept thinking, why – why would I need this? And now I know why I need this. I am in a great situation and I am employed and I do have a career and I am the sole provider. I actually have to fend for myself here. And I'm in a great place to do that and still be grandma and mom and participate in church activities. And I never would have guessed though that I would, you know, be in a situation to provide for myself, and yet suddenly I found myself in that situation. And I think, wow, this was a huge master plan you had for me. And really all I needed to do was show up and do the work. And I think that's the best advice I can give to anyone going back to school is that if this is what you're supposed to do, just take a leap of faith and you will land correctly. And the Spirit will direct you on where to go and what to do and how to do that. And maybe we don't understand those promptings, because I got a lot of flack about earning my doctorate.
I remember that as a kid.
Is she crazy? She's lost her mind completely. Why would she earn, you know, her doctorate? Why would she go back to school? And of course, part of it is true. If somebody's paying for it, why wouldn't you? But still, it's so time consuming. But in fact, now it's like a dream. It just happened. I know it was a lot of work and it took a lot of energy and time, and I had to have support from my family. But the next thing you know, it's done. And I am just amazed at the timeline in my life that you have a Heavenly Father that says, I know what you need right now. And if you do this, then in the future, it'll make sense. And there's a big trust in that, because I'm always amazed. Even though I know he knows my life and knows where it's going, I'm still amazed that every little detail is so focused.
Yeah. Well, and the impossible becomes possible. I think that's the thing over and over and over again. Like, I mean, when I felt that I needed to get my PhD, it was like November. And a lot of admissions deadlines are, you know, in a month. And I was like, I haven't taken the GRE. I haven't, you know, all these things. And then had a horrible GRE experience. I had cried before I left the testing center.
That would have been me.
The poor woman who like gave me my scores. I was like, I don't even care. Like, I just ran out and was crying. And I remember thinking, why am I crying? I don't even want to get a PhD. Now it's not going to happen. You should be happy, right? Because this was so bad. And then getting the phone call that I had been accepted. And at the end of the whole conversation, she says, oh, and by the way, we haven't gotten your GRE scores.
Wow.
Can you send those in? And I was like, you know, despite that horrible GRE score, it happened. I mean, so I think that is, Galen, you hit on that a lot. That is, if the Lord says that you should do blank, then he'll provide the way. Mm-hmm. Which in the moment is often hard to believe. And then hindsight, you're like, well, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my response is always, seriously, you want me to do what?
Really? Yeah. Why? Now?
Yeah.
Me?
And I always say, we always have a plan A and an idea of what we are going to do. And it changes to plan B. And so everybody ought to get used to just doing plan B.
Which is really your plan A.
Yeah.
That's true. It's never works out how you intended.
Yeah, that's life.
So how is your experience going and getting a doctorate comparing to your three school experiences, Galen?
What was it like? Or
I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of what the question is that I have about it. You were an older student each time, right? So you were in a different place, and obviously the degrees themselves were different. But I mean, how was each different in its own?
Yeah, I actually, when I teach my undergrad students, this is a lecture I give them, and most of them are older adults returning to school. I say to them, your undergrad degree will be the hardest degree you ever earn. And they look at me really funny. I said, because here's how it works. You're brand new to school. You take GE courses that maybe it's not your major influence. You're not something you really love. They're in my film class and they're wondering, I'm a business major. Why am I taking a humanities course? And so it's hard for them to go through those general ed courses. And I said, if you get through your undergrad the rest is downhill, because now you start to focus in on the topics you love. So you take a master's degree in a topic that you love and you're passionate about, and then you get into a doctor program that is it now even fine-tuned, and your subject matter is something that you really enjoy. And by then, you've learned how to write. You've learned how to read.
I just would add, I totally agree with you, because when I got my master's, that's exactly how I found it. It was like fun. And your professors, they like working with you and like you to come and talk to them. And they don't want to have you fail at all in any course, you know. And they work with you with your schedule and just everything about it. That's how I found it to be very fun and easy. Not easy, but easier than bachelor's.
Well, yeah. And, you know, as a professor of people, you know, older students who come back to school, I really, really enjoy having that variety and that diversity. You know, it's not just a bunch of 22-year-olds. Right. Especially since, you know, I'm in the education field. Older students, more mature students bring, you know, a different perspective, and they're usually often more serious. And so, I would hate for one of my more mature students to think that their age is a hindrance, because I honestly see it as an asset.
Right. In fact, I have a brother who turned 48 Saturday, and he has gone back to school to be a teacher. He said, I have always wanted to be a teacher. I've just never done it. I want to teach elementary school. And he's in a place to do that. And he's back in school earning a master's and wants to be a teacher. I said, it's great. It's fabulous. But he had that fear of, I'm going to be the oldest guy in class. I said, on the contrary, there might not be very many men in your class, but you will not be, you know, among the oldest, in class, in which he found that to be true. And he said, it's so much easier when you go back to school and you have some years of experience under your belt, that he had so much to offer. He said, I'm raising my own kids. They've now graduated from high school, and I have experience just going through school with them, as opposed to the younger student that, you know, doesn't have as many years experience.
Since we're on that topic about, you know, more mature students, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about going back to school?
Yes.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Well, I mean, I know in talking to women, especially who are thinking about going back to school, there's a lot of fear associated with that. So what would be... I mean, how did you, and Gloria, you talked about that a little bit, going back to that moment where you felt such a strong spiritual confirmation. But what about, there are women, I think, who don't necessarily have this great power, you know, powerful spiritual experience about going back to school. It just feels good, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Maybe for me, it was what I needed to be motivated to actually do it. But I would ask the question of, if you could take away your fear, then what would you do? And probably hands down, we'd all do a lot of things, you know, that we wouldn't do because we're fearful. So I did mention about going and finding out what career would suit your personality. I would definitely do that. That's the advice I give to everybody now, young and old. Follow your heart and don't be fearful. And especially if you're older, you know, I think this is not true with everybody, but it was so exhilarating to sit in the classroom and learn. And because I saw some younger students, they just wanted to get through the course and be done.
Right.
But for me, it was like, I can hardly articulate what it was like. It was just so wonderful.
I think it's a wave. It's just this wave of learning. They're aha moments. And I also think, so my advice is to be prepared to be uplifted. And don't, I say to my students, you can go through this class and you'll end up with a little piece of paper on the wall, or you can go through school and have it change your life.
Mm-hmm.
And So I think my advice would be, especially to an LDS woman wanting to return to school or have that feeling that you need to return to school, is to ask yourself why and what are those dreams, and to pray on that, because you can't go wrong if the Spirit says go for it. If this is what you need to do, then do it. And I guess I caution women that we are not Wonder Women. You know, Wonder Woman does not exist. It's fictitious. We are not Wonder Women. We don't have the outfit or the uniform, but we can be, thank goodness, but we can be women of wonder. And I think naturally we have this curiosity and this desire to have a greater knowledge, and it just makes us better individuals. Go with confidence.
Yeah. And, you know, and to remember, the glory of God is intelligence. And whatever we learn, we're going to take with us when we transition through the veil, you know. And you'll be a better person. You know, you're going to feel good about yourself, what you've learned. I mean, even if you don't go back for a degree, just go and take some courses, and you'll feel fulfilled.
So how would you suggest that Mormon women deal with naysayers? I can't say that word.
Naysayers?
Naysayers.
Let us repeat that question.
You can say it with a southern accent.
Naysayers. So what was my, I can't even remember the question now.
How would you suggest,
let's say a woman is dealing with a lot of people who are doubting them or naysayers in their lives about going back to school, that it's not their place, that they should stay home.
I have the same answer, and I say it with conviction because it's true. I say to them, I think it's an opportunity not to say it's none of your business.
Which I is what, think of a lot of nice, not
initial,
nice things.
Initial things you'd like to say, yes. But I always look at those moments as teaching moments. So I say to them, I know this may be a bit unconventional, but the Spirit has strongly suggested me to do this, and I am following that Spirit. There's not a whole lot they can say after that. And because it's true and they feel that from me when I say it, there's nothing more to be said. And or, you know, I understand the way you'd feel that way, but for me, this is how the Spirit has directed me, and this is what I need to do now. And I think some of those naysayers look at my life now and went, oh, now it makes sense.
You're like, duh.
Even I'm surprised.
Don't you want to go back and be like, I told you so?
No, I just think.
I know I'm kidding, but kind of.
There were some comments you think, where did that come from? What? And why did the need to say them? But I do. I think it's those naysaying comments, is that such a term? Those negative comments about going back to school and what you should be doing, it's just because they're unsure that it's a bit unconventional. And it kind of rocks the boat. And so I think it's an opportunity for me to just share my testimony of the promptings of the Spirit and to listen to that. I think my degree programs have kind of forced me, if you will, to rely on the Spirit. In fact, I found so many spiritual experiences, I tried to write them down, you know, every tender mercy, every experience, you know, like meeting the lady the first day of school for you. And I literally couldn't keep up with the writing, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, you learn to appreciate and be thankful for those opportunities. And I think when someone goes back to school, they'll realize that they are not alone, that the heavens are with them. And just like you, this, just walking onto campus, it's all it took was another individual. Every time I turned around, going to the library and not being able to find a book, or finding the book and it's in Italian, and wondering what I'm going to do with this Italian, you know, broke female artist when everything's in Italian. And then, you know, my daughter marries a returned missionary from Italy that went to Italy and speaks Italian. And I ran into a man that is from Italy that spoke Italian and could read Italian. But I even found that when I opened the books that I could be directed to where I needed to be, even though I didn't understand all the words, I knew that this was the book I needed. Mm-hmm. And so I know all of those things happen.
And that leads us kind of to the, you know, I mean, we've now at a present time, we've all gone to school a lot. So
forever.
What are you doing now?
What am I doing now?
What are you doing now, Gloria?
You know, it's interesting. After I graduated, my father-in-law passed away, and my mother-in-law lives alone and nearby, and I have spent a lot of time helping her and still to do some volunteer work. I chose not to work full-time because at the time I needed to make a 2-year full-time working commitment, and I chose not to do that. I didn't want to do that. And so I'm okay with that because, like I mentioned before, I use my education every day.
What am I doing now? Something I never, ever would have guessed. In fact, I think back at my elementary
You're doing
teachers.
An interview for a podcast.
I'm doing an interview for the podcast. That's true. I never would have guessed this is what I'd be doing. And I often think about my elementary school teachers and think, if they knew what I was doing, would they come and take all my degrees away? They'd just be in probably shock. And so would I, as that little girl. I never would have guessed. But I am I'm serving as an assistant dean for the College of Education at the University of Phoenix, and I am a full-time administrative faculty member as well. And I teach mostly in the College of Humanities, and have an opportunity to share what I love, and that's critical and creative thinking, teaching the humanities, Renaissance to Modern, especially because every time I teach it, I recognize the need for the restoration. And even my students who are not members say to me, what happened in the mid-1800s? Because the world seems to stand still for a moment. And to me, that's just, it's exciting for me to have them make connections. Of course, I can't fill in the blanks, but it's exciting for them to see that growth in their own personal life. And I would never have guessed that in 2008, I got a prompting that said, it is time for you to move from this position. I was a college chair at a San Diego campus. It's time for you to move from this position. And I thought, okay, this is the transition time. You know, you get them in your life. Okay, that's strange. Where do you want me to go? Just be prepared to leave. It's time for you to transition. And I every day became more and more antsy. And finally, the response was, you need to go home. You need to go home. And I thought, okay, I'll go home. Tell me what day to quit. I'll just go home, which is weird. All righty, it's where you want me to be. And 6 months later, which I guess was my transition time, I had an opportunity for somebody to call and say, would you like to, you know, I have another plan, I have another whatever, and let's do this and let's do that, and you want to come with me? And I thought, sure, that'd be great. We talked for a couple hours, and I went to bed, and I thought, that doesn't feel right, but I know I need to leave. And then the spirit said, but you need to leave and go home. So the next morning when the gal called and said, you know, I think I've changed my mind. I'm not going to take that other position. I said, that's good. So then I called my boss and said, I don't know how to tell you this, but I need to quit. I need to quit today.
Like now.
I actually called up the dean. I didn't call my boss. And she went into a panic and said, wait. You got to be kidding me. Why are you leaving? And I said, I just need to go home. And so she said, don't quit. Wait. So who would have guessed that I quit and get a raise and get a new position and actually get to work from home? And that prepared me for life events that transpired following that. And I am exactly now where I need to be. I am working in a field I love. I am teaching, which I love. I'm in higher ed, which I find fascinating. I get to study the humanities, you know, and that's part of my job to study that. And I get to work from home, which is amazing when you think about it. I mean, other than getting on a plane, you work from home, and to still have my family and children, I don't think they know I work, have my family and children close enough by to, you know, pop in once in a while or on the weekends to see me and not have to be driving back and forth to work and still maintaining, you know, a life at home, that I just feel so blessed that this is all of this, all that transition, all that going back to school was to bring me to this point. I never would have guessed I'd be at this point, but this is exactly where Heavenly Father said, this is where you need to be now, and I'm going to prepare you for this moment. I'm going to prepare you when you will be alone and you will be taking care of your family, and this is how it's going to work. Now, if you told me that way back then, I probably would have panicked, but everything prepared me to this beautiful transition, and I feel very blessed from that.
So just to wrap up, well, I want to thank Gloria and Gaylin for talking and sharing their stories tonight. And I found it to be inspiring and uplifting, even though I knew their stories, and I learned something new about them tonight, and we hope that you did as well. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.